Ladies and gentlemen, welcome you all to Drive Through HR, the number one internet daily radio show for the HR professionals, where we talk to our guests, mainly asking about what's keeping them up at night. And today, without further ado, let's talk to our wonderful guest, Linda Brunner, and she is from Designs on Talent. Check her out on Twitter at Designs on Talent. And if you're listening to us live on air, and if you prefer to ask any question, hit the hashtag on Twitter, DTHR. Or you can even listen to us on the go by dialing 2347-996-5600. So without further ado, let me welcome, first time on the show, Linda Brunner. Linda, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Nisha.
Well, pleasure to have you here with us, Linda. And you are joining with us for the first time. And if there is anyone out there among our audience who doesn't know of you, we would really appreciate if you can kick off by giving us a brief intro.
Awesome. That'd be great. I'd love to. Well, after spending a good chunk of my career leading talent management or talent acquisition functions at Gap, Pepsi, Home Depot, 10 years ago I left and started this business. Designs on Talent is an HR consulting business. We specialize in talent strategy, talent acquisition process improvement, and skills assessment and development for HR and TA.
That is awesome. Great companies, Gap, Pepsi, and Home Depot. And I'm sure with this entrepreneurship, you are about to share some of the most interesting things and probably one of the trends that is on top of your mind in the HR industry. So what is keeping you up at night these days?
Well, we work with a lot of Fortune 500 companies like L'Oreal, Raytheon, Coca-Cola. But what's interesting is whether we're working for a small company or a mid-cap with 300 or 500 employees or a business like Home Depot that has 350,000 associates, the reality of it is they've got many jobs that they can't fill because they're hard to fill. And what keeps me up at night is constantly getting better at helping assess a company's strengths and needs and then helping them with practical solutions that they can actually implement. That's what we're always trying to do, and we're always trying to get better at it.
Well, that's, again, one of the foremost difficulties of many organizations out there when it comes to filling the right candidates at the right time. But basically, why it is so hard to fill this position in the first place?
Well, that's a really good question. We often are hired by senior leaders, either a head of HR or a business leader, and the conversation often is like, what in the heck are these recruiters doing? How are we spending so much money? We have so many jobs open. It takes so long, blah, blah, blah. And the complaints are often the same, but the reality of it is it's not as simple as it appears to be. So when a leader says, I don't get it. There's a million people unemployed out there. Why can't we just pick somebody? Those of us that work in talent acquisition know there are a million moving parts. You've got tools, technology, process, people, org structure, metrics, compliance, vendors, integrations. It is all coming together, and it requires a very strong process orientation to do it well, even in a small company, I believe.
So let's say the orientation, if it is a small company or if it is a larger company, what are some basic criteria or basic strategies that you would suggest to your clients when it comes to building a talent acquisition team and coming up a strategy around it?
Well, this is probably not very exciting. This is not an exciting answer to your question, but I'm going to stick to my guns. In order to work, people need to be clear on what their job is. What am I supposed to be doing? when do I start and when do I stop, and what does good look like? You know, we talk to recruiters a lot when we have a very structured approach to auditing recruiting functions, and we do it pretty quickly. And one of the steps in the process is meeting with teams of recruiters. And I always ask the following question: what does good look like? How do you know you've done a good job? And about 80% of the time, the response we get is, I get yelled at. So often recruiters really don't know what good looks like. How many recs am I supposed to fill? How many am I supposed to be working on? How many candidates should I have in play at any one time? How effective are my sources? You know, whatever those metrics are, and we could debate those for much more than the time we have. But just defining people's jobs, and then hand in hand with that is clarifying the process. And I don't mean like a process flow document. I mean every step. What is the activity? What role is responsible for it? What data goes into that step? What data goes out of that step? What tools and technology support that step? And what, if any, compliance issues are there related to that step? It's a lot of work, but if you don't have that level of detail, people are making stuff up.
I know, right? But when we talk about, you know, the quantity versus quality, we have this high volume recruitment that is happening, but at the same time, we need to make sure the people that are stepping inside of our organization are going to, you know, stick around. Those are the right talent that we are hiring. So what are some steps that you would suggest to the recruiters in making their job successful?
Okay, so that's a great question. I mean, the reality of it is we have to break it down one further step, which is every company has two different types of jobs fundamentally. One bucket of jobs is the kind of jobs that I can post and get many applicants pretty quickly. So I might be a big brand, or I might be a well-known employer in my community, or I might have a really cool job. Whatever reason it is, whether it's a marketing coordinator or it's a call center rep or sales manager, whatever that job is, we call those high-volume applicant jobs. And they might be hourly, they might be salaried. In that case, we have got to lean on technology to optimize the process. And, you know, all the ATSs do this, but many, many companies don't leverage it, don't trust it, don't understand it, which is, you know, position-specific questions as part of the application process for these high-volume candidate recs. On the other hand, are the jobs where I can be dead before someone qualified actually applies, because they're very unique, they're very hard to fill, they're very specific skill sets, there's not a market in the area in which I'm looking perhaps. And so that is a completely different process. You know, that requires passive candidate sourcing skills and the guts to pick up the phone and call you, who I don't know at all, and say, oh, my God, Nisha, I know you don't know me, but I've got to tell you about an amazing job. Completely different skill sets and technology and process to support both those types of hiring.
So before we move on, let me ask you, which are those, or what are those positions that is really, really hard to fill?
You know, it really depends on what's your organization. So for some examples, right now clients we're working with a big healthcare company, medical assistants. They're always hiring. Mm-hmm. They have a very tough time finding the qualifications they'd like. Skilled nurses, OB nurses, clinical or cardiac care nurses. You know, IT is always really tough to fill in every company we work with, regardless of the industry, whether it's CPG or banking or, you know, a technology company. They've got IT jobs that are very tough to fill. You've got more senior leader positions like leader of digital strategy or global, you know, business development. They might be very, you know, high-level jobs, and the criteria are just really narrow, and that it needs to be that way. So every company's got their share of tough to fill jobs, and I think the minute a recruiter gets a rep, they know, like, their stomach sinks and they're like, oh, this is going to be a killer. So they know right there. You don't even have to be too scientific about it.
All right. So you kind of talked a little bit about the foreign sourcing or some of the sourcing techniques that sourcing ninjas out there are doing when it comes to finding out that purpose kernel, as you said. So does phone sourcing still have a place in recruiting today?
Does sourcing, did you ask?
Does phone sourcing, using phone as a sourcing tool,
still have a place
in recruiting today?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think some people, it's just like in sales. It's exactly like in business development. It's just like all of us who get bugged by vendors. You know, some of us don't mind a phone call. Some of us prefer email. Some of us want a text. Some of us, you know, are not open to any kind of overtures. Candidates are the same way. Some people will pick up the phone and they'd much rather have a one-on-one conversation, even with someone they don't know. So recruiters that are trying to fill hard-to-fill jobs have got to be good at writing compelling messages and being able to pick up the phone and with no warning, you know, or just thinking on their feet in a moment's notice, just having a great influential conversation with someone they don't know.
Well, while you were talking about, you know, writing compelling messages, you know, one of the lame thing that I have noticed among the recruiters is like they just copy and paste the job description and then put it out there instead of being a little more personal, a little more customized about the position that they are looking for. I know candidates, even recruiters, take probably 15 to 20 seconds to go through that. But still, content really matters, right? When it comes to attracting the right talent that you really want to bring to your organization. So what are your thoughts on, you know, communicating properly through the job description, making it more customized to attract the talent that you are searching for?
Well, that's a great question. And in recruiters' defense, you know, a lot of recruiters we work with are working 30, mm-hmm. 40, 50, you know, even 100 recs, and some of those are internal moves. It's just an overwhelming amount of work. It cannot be, it's not possible for them to go create sourcing plans and really do a good job of finding passive candidates. And we know, research tells us, that when recruiters have too many recs, whatever that is defined to be for the particular environment, the quality is what suffers. Paper starts getting mm-hmm. flung, managers start getting overwhelmed. But if a recruiter has the ability to, you know, write compelling messages, yeah, I mean, any of us can go look at any random company almost and just be almost horrified at some of these job postings, which are not jobs, should not be job descriptions. But, yes, it'll say must sit for, you know, extended periods of time. Well, that might appeal to someone like me who's incredibly lazy, but most people are not going to be compelled to take a job because you have to lift 10 pounds. And, I mean, the stuff that's in these job descriptions, is there's very little thought to it. And some of the recruiters, you know, some of the companies don't pay recruiters salaries, you know, marketable wages that they're going to attract really, really good recruiters. So it's all part of a, you know, it's like the people, process, technology trifecta. You need all three working in order for it all to work. You can't have great recruiters working with an undefined process and crappy technology and expect them to stay. And you can't have great technology and a really buttoned-up process with ineffective recruiters. You know, any of those, if they're out of whack, it's really a problem.
All right. Let's talk a little more about third-party recruiters, because I know you are helping your clients building their talent acquisition strategy. So what is the real time, or how do how how does an organization go about thinking what should be the real scenario that I should outsource recruitment?
So when we work with companies, often they have big chunks of talent acquisition outsourced, either, and usually a blend of RPO, contingent firms, certainly retain search for executives, and you know, because we're often working with big companies, I mean, this sometimes is millions and millions of dollars. It's like a mind-boggling amount of money that sometimes they're spending. And the reality of it is they still don't have consistency. They still don't have metrics. They're not even clear where the money's going because sometimes the managers themselves are paying for it. So it's what we help them do is get their arms around that. And what we also know from data and research and some amazing white papers that have been produced by agnostic companies or organizations, like research organizations, is that executive search, for instance, executive search done externally will result in lower retention rates and lower performance of incumbents. Internal executive search teams will drive better results. And some of the reasons for this is pretty obvious, I think, but they know the culture, they know the hiring managers, they know what's required for the fit of the job. But more than that, they don't have non-competes. So if I'm Pepsi and I'm hiring a search firm to find me somebody, that search firm already has a book of business, a book of clients that they can't touch. So already there might be some of my top contenders that are out of the party there because they can't work with them. So for a lot of reasons, we are proponents of, when it's supported, bringing executive search in-house. Now, we have nothing against executive search firms. Some on my team have been in executive search in the past. And we believe actually companies almost always have some level of need for executive search, but we believe in really these companies, intellectual capital is the primary asset of the business, for particularly for new economy companies like eBay and Facebook. I mean, the value of those businesses, Procter & Gamble, Coca-Cola, it's not in their businesses and their equipment. It's in the brand. It's in the IP. It's in the global reach and the customer databases and the proprietary stuff. And that's all driven by intellectual capital. So if we come across a company that's in large part outsourced TA, we believe that's actually the lifeline to the future of their business. And if they don't have that internal competency, it's a huge problem.
That's right. So talking about, you know, the third-party recruiters, and you said a little bit about the necessity of having the in-house recruiters as well. But then when it comes to the collaboration that in-house recruitors are interacting, or HR are interacting with the third-party recruiters, sometimes, you know, there are a lot of communications gap, and it's not necessary that the third-party recruiters really know the culture of the organization, the client organization that they are helping out, right? So
correct.
What do you recommend? Yeah, so what do you recommend to both our in-house recruiters and third-party recruiters? How should they collaborate better when it comes to making their job successful?
I think it's pretty much the same stuff that applies for internal TA teams to work well with their clients, with their stakeholders. It's defining roles, being crystal clear on what good looks like, and mapping out a very specific process. So, you know, again, when we work with companies, they're using a bunch of different search firms or contingent firms, and everybody's kind of doing their own thing. They don't have common contracts. They don't have common service level agreements. They don't have common ways of teeing up candidates and tracking them sometimes even. And that's problematic. It's inefficient. It's really expensive, and it will not consistently result in great hires.
So you talked a little bit about the metrics in the beginning. So what are some metrics that every recruiters and talent acquisition team should know and should work on?
Okay, so what I'm about to say, recruiters often get annoyed with me. But here's the thing. I know. So I have been a recruiter. Like it's everything I do is about recruiting. So, but I believe mm-hmm. that the most responsible metric any recruiting organization should be recommending is quality of hire. And I do not mean do the hiring managers like me. I do not mean mm-hmm. how many people stayed after 90 days. I mean 2, 3, 4 years after the hire is made, which of the talent I sourced and hired not only stayed with the company, but is performing at a high level, has been promoted, has been paid incrementally above and beyond others, has proven to be a star or a superstar performer. Now, the reason recruiters get agitated with me, and I understand it, is they will immediately say, legitimately, I don't mm-hmm. own that. Like, once someone starts, they could be working for a crazy manager. True. I got it. But we have to distinguish between what are we tracking and what are we held accountable for. And I think recruiting leaders are often in HR. They're often so focused on, I'm only going to track what I personally can influence and can control. Not even influence, what I can control. And they get very adamant that it's not fair to do this or that. I don't care about that. We are corporate stewards of the resources that we're managing. Whether it's a $14 million talent acquisition budget or $200,000, we are the stewards of that. We are responsible for ensuring we're driving business value. We should be stepping up and saying, look, I know I don't own all this, but let me tell you what we should be tracking. Where does our best talent come mm-hmm. from? Which sources do we need to invest more in? How can we predictably, and I don't even mean big data, I mean just looking at, wow, look, referrals actually work really well for us. But we're so far from that in many organizations and TA that we're still stuck in time to fill. And I that's all, efficiency, basic stuff. If we're not tracking the basics, then we just got managers saying, what's going on? It takes too long. And we're saying, no, it doesn't. It's super fast. And we have no data. So that's my lecture.
That is totally true. That is totally true. And in fact, when I talk to a bunch of recruiters, they are mainly more into a hacker mind, finding out the talent and sourcing the talent using all the social tools and techniques and breaking the next Boolean search and things like that. But mm-hmm. when it comes to focusing more on the, culture fit or competency fit, they are nearly lacking the skills, I guess. Or probably they are not that concerned about that detail of it. So what
right.
do you recommend for the recruiters when it comes to, you said the quality of hire is the foremost metric that every recruiter should know, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
How do we make sure? Yeah, so how should they make sure? Give them 3 tips and techniques that they can use on their day-to-day job to make sure they are, on a day-to-day basis, they are improving their quality of hire.
Yeah, no, that's great. I mean, the number one thing is track source code 100% of the time that we have a new hire. So don't assume that the candidate is selecting the right source or the system is magically always be, tracking the right URL. But the recruiters should absolutely, every time someone is hired, note with as much specificity as possible, where did this person come from? And we've talked to recruiters who have literally told us, I don't even know if that person shows up for the first day because we're not involved after that. And much less, they don't have oversight or maybe even access to data to indicate, who's sticking around after even 3 months or something. But they need to demonstrate to the business that they're not just trying to close recs. as fast as possible, but they are doing the best they can to have an eye on the quality. The other thing I would say, this is super basic, but we actually get all kinds of pushback about this. You know, people always ask me and the other folks on my team, who've led talent acquisition teams, by the way, for HP, Coca-Cola, Home Depot, they ask us, well, how many reps mm-hmm. should we be working? How many reps should my recruiters have? I can't answer that. You know, it depends on how complex are the jobs, how much of the process are you doing, what kind of tools and technology do you have to support you, what kind of, you know, coordination support do you have, do you have research? I mean, there's so many different components. But recruiters should be going to their boss and talking about how many recs should I be filling, should I be carrying, should I be filling. And it's math. We know if it's an easy to fill or a high volume applicant job where it's just sorting through the multitudes who have applied and we have good technology, it's going to be a quicker process than this very unique, hard to fill job. So we can apply math. We can say, oh, generally it's going to take X hours to fill each of these recs. And that should be a conversation that recruiters are having with their bosses, even if the bosses aren't entirely equipped to answer. But they should have a say about, hey, here's what I think great would look like for me.
Absolutely. You know, today morning I had a panel discussion with a group of HR and marketing experts, and they said, like, the engagement even starts before recruitment or before even that employee step inside the organization. It's not just during the hiring process, even throughout the recruitment process, and how well you provide a better candidate experience to them. So last but not least, we have about 2 minutes left at this point. What are your tips to our recruiters when it comes to providing a better candidate experience?
Well, let's see. I think we lose sight with the volume of just, you know, a gentle touch. And I don't mean by that, you know, physically talking to people all the time and telling them, I'm so sorry about this or that, but actually just thinking through what does this look like for the candidates? Go apply online. That'll take the wind out of your sails a lot of times. Or just take a look at the messages we're automatically sending to candidates. Even simple things like that, and striving to make that better, easier, more effective, more reflective of the company's brand, I think is a good way to start.
Well, thank you so much, Linda, for joining with us and sharing your valuable insights with our audience. We really enjoy talking to you. So where can our audience get a hold of you and probably continue this conversation? Any social media platforms that you wanted to share or email address?
Sure. Designs on Talent on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter. One word, Designs on Talent. And I'm Linda at Designs on Talent email.
Alrighty, folks. So you got that. That was Linda from Designs on Talent. And connect with her and continue this conversation. And Linda, have a wonderful rest of the day. Thank you so much for being here with us today.
My pleasure.
All right.
Bye-bye.
We will talk to you all tomorrow. Thanks. Bye-bye.